Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. I am your co-host, Matt Halloran, joined by Chuck and Mark, of course. And today we're going to be diving into playing tic-tac-toe with the equity style box. Now, Chuck, usually when you give me these titles, I feel like I have some idea what you're talking about. But today, dude, I got nothing. So what are we talking about today, my friend?
Great to be with you again, Matt. Thank you so much. So the tic-tac-toe box is reminiscent of the equity style box, which is put out by a firm called Morningstar, the most prolific, I think, third-party database manager here in our industry. So we've talked about our P stands for process before. So what we're going to do is we're going to, in our minds, develop a tic-tac-toe box, right? We got the nine boxes. And what we're going to do is we're going to try and draw an uppercase P, which covers a portion of that style box, as we pivot from what was decade ago or so, the large growth, which is the upper right corner of the style box, which ruled everything.
So Chuck, let me interrupt you real quick. Couple things I think we want to do here in terms of this podcast. First of all, we should tell the listeners that the style box was created as a function of modern portfolio theory and the idea of asset allocating. Yeah. And when you look at the style box, on the left side of the tic-tac-toe screen is your value, large cap, mid cap, small cap value. Yeah. In the middle boxes are the blend of growth and value. And then on the right side of the style box, it's large cap growth, mid cap growth, small cap growth. The average advisor that cookie cutters portfolios and quote unquote, part of the thing that causes over diversification for people is that they try to plug in ETFs or mutual funds into each of these style boxes and call that the appropriate diversification. We have often talked about it being a cookie cutter process that we don't necessarily believe in. But all that to be said, I figured we should let them know that to give them a visual of what the style, why the style box is there. It is a function of modern portfolio theory.
It is, Mark, and great lead into that. So maybe if everyone could visualize a tic-tac-toe box as Mark just laid it out. And as you would visualize the nine boxes, the upper left assign the number one and just go across from left to right through the first three levels. And you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now, number three represents large cap growth. So as Mark just laid out, modern portfolio theory subscribes to something called market cap weighted as the size determinant of how actually portfolios are constructed if they're based off of an index. So when we go back in time, and this is actually going back 15 years, I'm going to give you these numbers, Mark, because they were startling. So if you go back over the last, let's call it 10 years,
yes,
number three, large cap growth. So that's Microsoft, Apple, Google, which is now Alphabet, Facebook, which is now Meta Platforms, earned 15.4%, while small cap value down at number seven on the bottom left-hand row earned 9.87. If you go back over 15 years, Mark, large cap growth, 11.4, small cap value, 6.64. The key here that I want to bring across to everyone, and I want you to comment, is that we lived in a world, right, where we had globalization, we had coordinated central bank policy, we had negative interest rates in many countries, zero interest rates here, which caused people to speculate and own growth in a decade that ruled where we had low costs of goods, we had ample trade. And with COVID and what's happened in Russia and China, that may very well change where the style box is no longer ruled by number three, which is large growth, and may pivot to value. So how about if I hand that back to you there?
All right. A lot to unpack. First of all, what most people don't realize is if you go back 15 years ago, when large cap growth started becoming the number one performing style box, the reality is that value stocks have actually long-term outperformed growth stocks.
Yes.
So that's number one. That's very important to remember. Number two, the reason why the last 15 years has been led by not just large cap growth, but mid cap and small cap growth relative to their counterparts in the value side of mid cap and of small cap is to think of it this way. Whenever people get a raise or when they get more money in their bank account, whether they inherit it or they get a loan or they tap, people used to tap into their home equity lines. They had the sense that they had more capital to work with, more capital to spend, more capital to invest. And human nature would dictate that people who have more cash have a tendency to be a little bit more aggressive in making investment decisions, right, no matter what it is, even if it's buying a more expensive car per se. So my point is we've lived in this world where the federal government, the Federal Reserve has printed all of this money. You have excess capital in the system. And when you have excess capital in the system, what does it do? It makes people feel richer. People feel like they can take on more risk. When you have a global economy where you are making things in other parts of the world, and as people probably have heard in the news lately about the bill that just got passed here in the United States to bring all the semiconductor manufacturing back home and a lot of the drug manufacturing is coming back home, you're going to see an industrial revolution here in the United States because we are now decoupling globalization after what we've seen happen with COVID and the supply chain problems. So you have two major things happening in the United States and around the world that investors have to be aware of and cognizant of as it pertains to how they invest their money. Number one, the Fed has turned off the spigot. The money is drying up. They're going to take money out of the system, which means there will be less money to work with to make investment. So people by nature will think more conservatively about how they make their investments because they will not have access to the capital to do that. The second thing that's going to happen and is going to, in without question, is all of this manufacturing is going to come back to the United States. And while it's great that we're going to be making the chips, semiconductors here at home, the reality of that is it's more expensive to produce things in the United States than it is in other parts of the world.
Absolutely.
So while I can appreciate every Tom, Dick, and Harry getting on CNBC and Fox Business and blabbing about trying to get inflation under control, where does Powell want inflation to get back down to 2%? What does he think is neutral? What is this and that about inflation? The reality is that the decisions that we have been making are long-term, that higher inflation is here to stay, period, end of story. And not only that, that inflation is not going to be just in semiconductors, it's going to be in all parts of manufacturing, there's going to be less capital available to invest in higher risk things. Now, I'm not saying it's all going to go away, I'm saying there's going to be less, which means if you're an investor, you may want to think twice or three times about knowing what you own and why you own it.
Absolutely.
And what is the actual true value of the asset you're buying? And what's happening because of the last 15 years of all this money going in the system and the globalization of everything being manufactured in other countries at a lower price is, the economy is literally, and the markets, we believe, are going to shift back to a more historical level. They always call it, the pendulum swings both ways. There's always a reversion to the mean. The reversion to the mean, in my opinion, our opinion here at Nepsis, is that value and dividends are going to become the primary drivers of decision-making for investors. We've talked about dividends and the amount of impact they have on portfolios. Lots of companies are doing stock buybacks. These are things you want to be looking at in companies that you invest in. Because guess what? Companies that don't make money don't pay a dividend. And if they do, you may not want to own it. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, a company that doesn't have money, they're generally not buying their shares back either. And I know there's always could be an exception to the rule. But I think the bottom line for us, for the people listening here, Chuck, is that they need to understand while it can be considered a new investment world, it's actually really not new. It's getting back to the historical norm, the reversion back to the mean. And that's what I think we're really here talking about with tic-tac-toe. Did I just do your whole presentation in five minutes for you?
You did, and it was superb. I was just sitting here. I was like, I wanted to just get in and say, great comment, great, and then it would have just ruined your flow. So I'm glad I kept my mouth shut here. Maybe Matt just put me on mute. But anyway, that was superb. And I love what you just said, because I've been speaking with some younger advisors, right? To them, we're a bunch of old fogies here, but there's something to be said for experience, right? Of decades.
Yes, 100%.
I'm going to say a couple things of what you just said here. So we've lived in a world where inflation was slightly over 1%, right?
Right.
The average rate of inflation, we did this, you had the great research team at NEPSIS, right? And was it Okanagan, Nebraska? Is that where our headquarters is? I always forgot that.
Yeah, the David Letterman thing.
Yeah,
always say, yeah, Wahoo, Nebraska.
Yeah. So the average rate of inflation annually was 3.28%, and you mention that to some young buck, and they're like, "Oh my goodness, well, what does that have to do with anything?" Well, we'll think about that. You mentioned about money, right? And that's the erosion of that capital over time. So how do you invest in a company that you feel as though can overcome that? The annual, let's call it depreciation in the value of a dollar. You just nailed it. You want a company that pays a dividend and grows their dividend.
Right.
And you want a company that has earnings growth.
Well, this is why energy companies are doing so well this year.
You got it.
To the rest of the market. Yeah. Energy companies, partially because the government won't let them drill, number one. And number two, they've become more fiscally responsible. And their number one mantra is the return capital back to the shareholders in these oil companies. They're not going to over drill like they did in the mid 2000s and cause the crash that eventually took place and ended in COVID. And they've learned their lessons. And so these energy companies, they're paying out dividends, capital back to the shareholders, and they're buying their stock back. And they're as oil as the world needs. And listen to this very carefully, Uncle Matt. This is important. Over the next 30 years, the world is going to need more oil, even though we're trying to reduce the amount of oil needed. And so you have this dichotomy going on here where there's no drilling going on. The companies aren't going to drill, and the government is forcing them to do clean air. And listen, we're all for carbon neutral, right? Anything that's going to be better for the atmosphere and for the world. But the reality is, you can't do it all at once. You can't just shut the spigot off. And that is why whenever you build a refinery or start drilling, that takes years in development. You can't just turn on a light switch and it happens. And so the problem you're going to have is you are going to live with higher energy prices. Even if we go into a recession, it's still going to be higher because the amount of energy that's available isn't there. And if you even want to do a little due diligence yourself and see what's happening in Europe right now, it's unbelievable. They're in deep, deep trouble as it pertains to energy. They're already right now rationing energy in Europe right now. So that I bring all that up to say that is a major inflationary component. And people are going to have to live with higher energy prices, not only to heat their house, but to drive their cars.
You said it so well. And think about this too, that rate of inflation, which we just went over. If you go all the way back to the beginning when records were taken on equities, and you slice it between value and growth, there's really been only three periods on a rolling 10-year basis where value has underperformed growth. It was during the Great Depression, which was a similar, right, where you had virtually, right, no growth and you had 0% interest rates. The tech boom of the last 2 years of the 90s and this last decade, it's really the only decade where growth outperformed value. Right. So you get younger people just can't fathom that as to how this could occur going forward when it is the norm, right? Hey, it's the new normal redone, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are down right now 20, 30, 40% in their portfolios year to day. A lot of people.
Right.
Fortunately, we have weathered that storm far, far better, significantly better. But we've talked about that in previous podcasts about how we repositioned 18 months ago. But we live in a world where a lot of people that are in this business are younger and they weren't investing in 1999 and 2000. And I'm just telling you, these people have no idea how much I harped on the committee that we're setting ourselves up for another 1999, 2000. And sure enough, the S&P 500 PE ratio got to 24. And the last bust in 99, 2000, the PE was 25. 24 is close enough for me.
It sure is.
That's too high. And so we repositioned. And yes, we own some growth names longer term because we do believe in asset allocating. But I do believe we are in a much different investment world, investment process than people have been used to in the last 20 years.
Absolutely. So let me focus on this tic-tac-toe and in the style box, if we could. So again, the audience, if you can paint a mental picture about a tic-tac-toe box, are you going from left to right? You got 1, 2, 3 in the first row, 4, 5, 6 in the second row, 7, 8, 9. So we always like to say, Mark, right? Process before progress. You got two P's, right? The third P is we pivot towards what is likely going to be a higher inflation, higher interest rate world. Think about a P within that style box. So again, we got 1 and 2, and then we have 4 and 5, and we have 7. So if you could just picture what that looks like, so that's large value. I just finished large value, large blend, mid value, mid blend, small value. If you looked at our portfolio, that's where the focus has been on a bottom up basis, right? Selecting companies in this environment. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So bottom line is, by the way, I believe we have the best research team out there. We don't have 500 people that work here. We have 5. I keep it simple. Too many people chatting gets too many ideas because people like to hear themselves talk. So the smaller, the better, quite frankly, number one. Number two, as much as I love you, Chuck, sometimes I have to rein you in a little bit because there's probably not one person listening to this podcast that's envisioning a pee in the style box.
Okay.
But I love the analogy and the idea, but you're way smarter than me. So I'm going to break this down for the guys like me who lose focus quickly with their ADD and say, at the end of the day, when you want a tic-tac-toe, you're going to want to have it be on the value side of the style box, large cap value, mid cap value, and small cap value.
Excellent.
It doesn't mean you don't own some growth. You can splinter in a little bit on the growth side, is that's what you're aptly defining here with your P's, right? But at the end of the day, if a company is not making money, they better be on track to make money. And I'm on the phone a lot lately on a bunch of stuff. And I'll tell you right now, the hottest thing going on right now is the energy sector. If people do not realize that the energy stocks are close to their 52-week highs right now, and oil is at 93 a barrel. And when they hit the 52-week highs back in the spring, oil was at 130.
Okay.
So in other words, the stocks are creeping back up to their 52-week highs. Oil's at 93. Where are these stocks going to be when oil gets back to 130? And in my opinion, there's no question that's going to happen. Now, full disclosure, do your own diligence, due diligence, make your own investment decisions or hire professionals, and make sure you still asset allocate. There are other great businesses to own than just energy. But the point is, you're going to want to own companies that have market multiples or lower. So PE ratios of, call it 16 to 20 or lower. You're going to want stocks that have dividends. The last time I checked, I believe 20 of the companies our clients own pay dividends, 20. And by the way, that's been primarily the case, almost the same case, particularly in our conservative portfolios, which have held up a lot better than normal conservative portfolios. A lot of people hung on to these growth stocks, and the Fed, they're all mad at the Fed, but I'm pretty sure he was telling people, we got to bring this thing under control. And that started last fall. And that's when the game changed. And at this point, it's going to become a stock picking strategy, i.e. a strategy of investing in great businesses over time and not doing the indexing stuff and not owning 10,000 companies in your portfolio, or it's just going to frustrate you. Now, of course, that's just our opinion here at Nepsis.
Mark, I wanted it, which is superb. And I want to take you right back to what you're talking about, some of the fundamentals, and we can wrap this up in a couple of minutes here. Free cash flow. That's talked a lot about. You mentioned some of the business networks. And I know that's kind of a nuanced finance term, but bring it down, what you always do, to the level of, say, a household budget or just somebody running a small business. What's so important about free cash flow and why the businesses that we have a higher proportion than what you say the average company out there?
Sure. Well, a company could come out and tell you what their earnings per share is. But some of those earnings per share are not actual cash. They're accounting strategies.
Exactly.
And so you can say I made $3 a share, but on a cash flow, the actual cash you brought in, it was a dollar and a half, let's say. I'm just giving an example.
Right. Yeah.
At the end of the day, you've got to have money in the bank account. And you can say what you've made or what you've lost. And this, by the way, says the same thing for companies that say they lost $3, but they had $800 million or $1 billion of free cash flow.
Cash flow.
Right?
Yeah.
So free cash flow becomes an important aspect because that is what can actually be returned to the shareholders or can be put into the bank account and reinvested in the business or reinvested in other businesses. So, you know, a lot of people may not realize that a lot of corporations that make money, they take a lot of their money and they invest in other companies in the stock market, just like our clients do. And you, the business owners, i.e. whether it's a company that's publicly traded or a private person who listens to the podcast here, that's a business owner. The reality is that if you're free cash flow positive, you are putting money in the bank. You are reinvesting in your business over time to create greater wealth or greater value of that business.
How do you like that, Matt? That was nailed to the tree, right? With passion, conviction, and actually finance 400 level, not 101.
Oh,
that was deep, my man. That was excellent.
Well, I try not to go that deep because I don't know how to swim.
I thought you actually swam pretty well. Okay, so Chuck and Mark, a couple of things. So Chuck, I visualized the pee through the whole thing, so I'm sorry,
thank
Mark,
you.
I don't agree. I totally saw the pee in the style box. So Chuck,
I'm
on
your side. There's goals out there like me. I had to stick up for my Bobos.
But other than that, I thought it was fascinating. Number one, being able to understand how all of these things work together is one of the reasons why I think it's so important for people to listen to this show. It's amazing to me how disjointed people think that if something happens here, it doesn't affect this and it doesn't affect this. And, right. And you guys did a very good job today of talking about how all of that integrates very, very well. But finally, if you haven't actually had the level of clarity that you need to have in these times of uncertainty, right, where there's a lot of uncertainty, probably maybe not more, but we're just more hyper aware of it. Why aren't you investing with clarity? It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to know what you own and why you own it. So with that, please go to the Nepsis website. Please make sure that you subscribe to the show. But most importantly, go to the website, fill out some information to find out how you truly can invest with clarity. Get involved with this amazing research team and actually feel comfortable that you know what you own and why you own it. So for Mark and Chuck, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.